everyone, this is Lara Eady, and we're back with another episode focusing on incredible singer-songwriters from around the world. And my next guest is the lovely and incredible Nadine Khoury. Hey Nadine, how's it going?
Hey Lara, good. Thank you so much for having me.
It's my absolute pleasure. As we were talking earlier with Nadine, folks, I kept telling her that I couldn't wait to bring her on this podcast for a number of reasons. Besides the non-musical ones, I would say that I'm very happy to actually have, you're my very first fellow Lebanese artist. So it's incredible. Smiles all around across Zoom. I'm going to go ahead and introduce your lovely self. Nadine Khoury is a Beirut-born musician currently based in Marseille, France. She is a highly acclaimed singer-songwriter, often compared to the likes of Cat Power, and more female songwriters. And I think that after listening to your music, I think that I would agree that it appears to be very minimalist, but there are so many intricate, beautiful layers. And that's exactly what this podcast is about. It's about diving into your music and uncovering things. So I know that we could spend hours talking about all your marvelous accolades, but I would just love to just dive right in there and ask my very first question, if that's okay. And I know that you've just last year released this incredible album called Another Life. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Can you talk to us about this album, please?
Yeah, so it sort of came about in a very weird time, because it was like we were supposed to go into the studio. I think it was, I mean, I can have, the dates are a bit jumbled in my head, but basically the pandemic had just been, had just started. So everything got canceled that we were supposed to do. I think we were supposed to start rehearsals, and it was intended as like a live recording. So we couldn't meet with the musicians. So it was a very bizarre moment. And so it was put on hold. During the pandemic, I mean, the periods that were in confinement, I didn't do that much writing. So a lot of the album was sort of like, some of it was written before that, and then some of it was written like after restrictions were lifted, like the more strict confinement. So that was the period in which it was conceived. But it was, I think 2020 was a very difficult year, and a lot of the things were happening. I think that there was a lot, I mean, as with most of my work, like it's kind of, I don't say introspective, but there is, you know, me just thinking about the things that I'm writing about, the things that I'm thinking about, not necessarily in a conscious way, but that's the things that came out. So I was thinking about, you know, my place. I was living in London at the time, so I was like thinking about my place there, what I was doing, where I was going, where I'd been, the lives that I've lived, and a lot of those things.
The lives that you've lived, can you elaborate on that? That's a very, very beautiful little detail that I know that there's a story there. What do you mean?
I mean, I think like most displaced people, like there's a, obviously where I grew up and then where I was coming of age, and then I also lived in the States for a while and then came back to the UK and then decided to move to France. So it feels like, I mean, I think with anybody, like the older you get, you have like a lot of lifetimes in one, often. I don't know, maybe not everybody, but I think I would say a lot of displaced people maybe have that as well. You know, there's like, you remember where you grew up and where you were and where you ended up. I mean, I know it's a horrible thing to think about the life you would have had if you hadn't had to leave, but like, I think it's not uncommon.
I totally agree. And I'm so grateful for you to say that, because it's very, I would say it's not a difficult thing to admit, but it certainly feels like a difficult thing to say, to declare almost. And I agree with you. I think going back to what you've described, your album, actually, Another Life, when I heard it, that's exactly the message that I sort of unearthed for my own, you know, benefit. I guess, I mean, I connected to your album also as a displaced artist, as you said, given our heritage. And I think that it seems to me that your music, like you said so earlier yourself, either consciously or subconsciously, speaks of finding almost like you're trying to find certainty through the uncertainty. And I think that's a very powerful statement because every single lyric in that album, I find that there are three main themes. There is the theme of breaking down the walls of our previous life. Then there's the theme of who are we now in the present moment? And then the final theme is, are we actually a combination of both? And that's what it feels. Nadine's smiling, so that must be a good thing. So that's what it feels like to me. And I think that what you said before, that during lockdown, you know, it was almost, and I'm very glad you said that actually as well, it was almost impossible for artists to kind of unearth or have the inspiration to write, you know, and
Yeah, I think, I mean, I think it was like split in two camps, like the people who could and those who absolutely could not.
Exactly.
Yeah, someone was like, I was so productive during lockdown. Like I wrote so much. And I was like, what? Like I couldn't even read it, like a page in a book. I was like completely, you know, consumed by anxiety and not at all the space that I would need to be creative, you know.
Absolutely. And talking about space, you're actually wonderfully parlaying into my next question. I think what in your mindset now as Nadine Khoury in this present moment, what do you constitute as a space that would enable inspiration? What whether it's ideal or not, what does that translate to you?
What do you mean exactly? I
Ah,
don't
so you said about having a space to create. So are you
Yeah.
talking about a literal space or a
I think
mental?
both. Yeah, like so within yourself and also you know, like a well, I think at that when I was saying it, yeah, it was definitely within oneself, like to have just the freedom in your mind to be able to go to places, a creative space. And for me that has always been to be in a space. I mean, personally speaking, not everybody. But I find that I'm most productive when I'm in a space of solitude, where I can fully be, you know, immersed in the task at hand. So, you know, if I'm thinking about I have to organize this tour or I have to do this or that, I cannot really give that much of my I can't summon the creativity when I'm in that state of mind. I feel like my brain is not like
Is not
able to do both at the same time at all. I'm not very good at multitasking, but like.
Well, you know, I think I again, I'm glad you say that. Because I struggle with this as well. I think most artists do. I think in this day and age, sometimes multitasking is seen as something extremely positive, whereas I think that actually, no,
Right.
it does. Like you said so
You should do
yourself.
everything badly.
Exactly. I'm so glad you say that. I think it's so counterproductive, and I think it actually takes a lot more mental space and emotional space actually to focus on one task. And speaking of music and so and composition, the already that's multitasking, you know? And so I would say that for you as a songwriter, in with focusing particularly on this wonderful album, Another Life, did you find that you dedicated yours you gave yourself a dedicated time frame to compose the songs, or did they just come to you? What was the sort of process, if there was a process actually?
I think I allowed the songs to come, so I was in the beginning because I didn't know what was going to come next. So I was just like letting them. I mean, obviously sitting at my computer and writing the music, but not forcing the music, just sort of like letting whatever was going to come, whatever form that was going to happen. So I was just trying to be sort of open about what was gonna get written, I guess, in the beginning. I read a book recently about creativity, and I don't know if that was exactly the first stage of creativity as they describe, but they call it like planting the seeds, like just doing that. And then once like I started to collect enough songs, I could start to see themes. Even if they were vague, like start to come together. And then I at some point I did have a deadline, so because we had booked a recording studio, so I had to have everything arranged and ready to be performed live. So I brought my demos to the band, and we sort of like tried to recreate it as five or six people together,
Wonderful.
and just be like super ready for the studio where we would just play them live, and that would be the most, you know, the bulk of the work was that.
Oh, I'm like, well, you can see that I'm smiling, really, really smiling, because you just touched upon something which I want to get into, if that's okay. The actual recording process. So I remember, I mean, with my own work even, I always found it very, very almost like a precarious task to decide whether or not I wanted to go into the studio and do a live take with everyone in the same room versus layering. And it seems to me that you chose the former.
Yes. I mean, that was also the producer that I worked with. Like, we had like when we first discussed the album, that was our idea, so that that would be the sort of starting point.
Yes, a starting point. And do you
Well,
feel
actually,
like
most of the work, I would say.
most of the work, exactly? Yes, you took the words from my mouth. Thank you. And actually, touching on that, when you're in a recording studio, do you find that, because as singer songwriters, we're not just singers and we're not just songwriters, we're everything and everything in between. So did you find that you had to assume the role of also band leader and conductor whilst you were in, and how does that feel for you as like a process?
So when I was younger, I think I did not have the capacity to be a band leader. Like, it was just seemed, I don't know, I was not good at being a band leader because, you know, just I think, but then the older I've gotten, I think that I've learned to become one with my project, as this, like, you know, trying to communicate what is working and what is not, or trying to encourage like experimentations of different things. And yeah, it took me a long time to understand how to fill that role, because it's not one that felt natural to me, like, because I've always been, I don't know, but not at all consider myself a leader of any kind. Like, I don't have that,
Wow.
naturally speaking. But I
Wow.
think that when you're creating a work, like, you want to be happy with it at the end, right, when you finish. And so I mean, I have to say as well, with this recording, I was blessed to have like the most amazing people on board, and the kindest and most talented musicians that I know. So that made it so easy. It didn't feel like I had to, you know, be in that so much in that position too much at all. And also, John Parrish was producing, so he was directing
Yes.
how things should go, and also keeping an eye on time and things like that. So, but I, again, like, it really felt like a family. We'd been in this very weird time where we were rehearsing, but we really weren't seeing any other people at all. And so it was a very, very special recording, and possibly one of the easiest that I've done, in that regard, even though it was very, you know, a very strange time, like, because we were in a bubble, you know, like, we couldn't, yeah.
Wow. Well, you know what? I think that's a perfect introduction to listen to the first track I'm going to play today of yours, lovely Nadine. And if you don't mind, would you mind introducing the track and maybe giving the audience a little hint of what to expect? So I've chosen Keep On Pushing These Walls. I, yeah.
So go ahead.
No, please introduce.
So yeah, Keep On Pushing These Walls, the track I wrote, it was in tribute to a singer called Lasa de Cela, who's a Mexican American artist that I love very much. And this was a track inspired by some of her writings and her work for her.
Wow. Thank you, Nadine. Okay, folks, have a listen. This is Keep On Pushing These Walls.
Carry me into light, out of myself into this fragrant night. Keep on pushing these walls, keep on searching for something true. Breaking in time, throw me a line, I sing back to you. A flood of light into a space so small, the space expands inside your gentle hands. You saw the road unfold, weaved its cement in. Your voice it could awake a rising moon over Montreal cafes. At home in the deep unknown, unafraid of where you go. Your dust will tell what your flesh could not. Through the window I feel a shock. Something new, a tether veil, cast a spell, picking up the clues. Of the clues. Keep on pushing these walls. We surrender in this moment to your voice. We travel so far, transformed at the beginning of your voice. Something real, a moment in time. Throw me a line, I can't help but feel. Help but feel. Keep on pushing these walls.
Keep on Pushing These Walls by Nadine Khoury. Very inspiring story there, and I urge you to listen to her music. And don't worry, we're going to plug in your website at the very end, of course, for people to check you out. Lovely Nadine, I want to just go ahead and ask you something about, I want to say identity, but I think we both know that it's a lot more complicated than that. When you're a singer-songwriter, especially as a female in this largely, I think, still male-dominated industry and Western-dominated industry, have you found yourself in a position where you had to talk about your identity as a person versus your identity as an artist? I wonder if that ever came up during your career as a singer-songwriter.
Yeah, it's definitely come up a lot. I mean, I think there's also like people wanting to, well, A, there's people wanting to focus on that and talk about that all the time, sort of irrespective of the work. Not irrespective, but sort of like, sorry, the question is very, there's a lot of answers to the question. So I think we should begin.
Begin anywhere.
Wait, can you ask me again so I know I get big?
I know. And I thank you for being brave to answer the question. It's a multifaceted question. Most of my questions are like that, it seems. But I think just because when you're dealing with a medium, to go back to the music part, when you're dealing with a medium like music, it's almost very difficult to separate artist, right, from the music. And it's almost impossible to ignore an artist's own identity. Now, when I pose the question to you, it's coming from a feeling of your background as a Lebanese artist, but you've lived in so many places. So, and I know we've spoken about this before, it's not like the cultures that you've grown up with are a direct, let's say, influence on your music. It's more about what you've listened to. So it's a, I guess that's my feeling when I listen to your music. And my question was, how did you handle all that? Not just in terms of journalists and, but just more like conversations and, or even if the culture has affected you, I'm just curious to know in what way.
Okay, so when I grew up, there's not really like that many examples of someone doing this, and so there was no, not that many references for me at least, as like a young, Lebanese girl playing guitar, wanting to be a singer, and it was like an absurd idea, in a lot of people's eyes, and so I guess I started from that point. Like there was not that much I could look up to or look to. Except like a lot of the Western music that I loved. And also I was living in the UK, so I was very much influenced by that music. And then I think I first really started playing to strangers like when I moved to America, like the US. And it sort of overlapped with the time that like September 11th happened. And it was a very difficult time. And I think it was really then that I started to feel like this identity, quote unquote, was being sort of put into question. Or, and I, well, first of all, because I didn't want to find a stage name because I couldn't think of anything that I would use that didn't feel phony at the time. Now I understand why people would, and in fact, in this age, in this day and age, it's nice to have that separation. But I wasn't looking to be a kind of persona of anything. And also I decided to just keep my name, I think consciously at the time, because I felt there were so many awful, ignorant negative stereotypes that maybe if I just kept my name, it would show some, I don't know, it was in defiance of that period of time where I lived there. And now I would probably, if I could, I don't know if I would keep releasing under my solo name in the future, but it's definitely, I mean, it's a question that I've had to think about a lot on different levels, but I don't know if I've answered the question.
You have so wonderfully and beautifully and eloquently answered the question. I'm silent because I'm just listening in awe. And thank you for your bravery, because it is brave, and especially, without going into it, given the times we find ourselves in, it would be strange to ignore what's happening. And like what you said again so beautifully, you chose to keep your original name, which is gorgeous, obviously.
I mean, it's so
Sort of,
generic. It's very kind of you to say.
no, it's not, it's really
Oh, God.
not. No, I think it's a nice name.
Thank you.
And I think that you chose this name, and that displayed an act. I would say that not just, I wouldn't call it an act of defiance, given everyone's needs to come up with, like you said, a very flamboyant art stage name, but I would say it was more an act of integrity. I
Yeah, I
that
think also like they pick names to, I mean, at the time I thought like a lot of names were just something to hide behind,
yes.
and I didn't want to do that. But now I end up, because now it's like, there is no, everything is so crazy with the internet that it's not what I grew up with at the time. It was much more, now it feels a lot more exposed, I should say.
Absolutely. And I can relate to that, as a singer-songwriter myself, and to sort of go back to the musical aspect. I would say that, we've spoken about this, we touched upon it briefly. The voice itself, when you're a singer, is one of the most vulnerable instruments, if not the most vulnerable instrument. So when you're on stage, let alone a recording studio, I find, I don't know if you also feel this, you find that you're constantly having to perform a different version sometimes of yourself. Or if it's not different, a part of yourself that just feels so incredibly vulnerable, and you're having to do it on a stage in front of people, in front of strangers. And I think that's the magic in being very, very authentic to your artistic voice, which I keep hearing in your music. Do you feel like that when you're on stage, that it's a magical experience, but sometimes it feels like maybe you don't want to be so vulnerable the whole time. I don't know. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, it is like putting yourself in a obviously vulnerable position. Anything can go wrong. Like, there's a whole number of things that could happen. And I think really the best moments on stage is when you're really just in the music so much that those things are of no concern, and that you could really give through your voice. But just, I mean, I'm not. I mean, I never. I was always a very shy person when I was growing up, and I'm wasn't the kind of person who like get on stage. It's just it is this very exposing situation if you think about it rationally. But I think being behind the microphone gave me some kind of strength, because I
Superpower.
couldn't be heard without one. Like, and so I think, yeah, like being fully immersed in the sound and with connected with the audience is like just like the best place to be in when you're on stage. But if you are feeling stressed or something awful is happening for whatever reason, it can be very stressful for sure.
I agree, and thank you for saying that, because that's sort of like we live in this constant, as singer-songwriters, dichotomy of letting things just happen, letting things just be, which is the magical part of music, and then, sort of switching on, maybe sometimes uncontrollably, our rational brains and going, okay, what was that? What can I do better? And where am I going with this? And logistics.
And the voice is so sensitive, right? So like if you haven't slept the night before, or if you're feeling a little bit tired or sick, or like it all gets affected, and then it's a tougher job to get on stage and sing when there's all these other things, factors that have been affecting your voice.
Absolutely. And I think we've come a long way, I think, for me at least, in the industry about addressing, mental health, things like mental health and well-being, and just taking care of oneself, really, especially as singers. It's very difficult for us. We don't really have a on-off button, No disrespect to our beautiful instrumentalists that we play with.
Have
But,
a joke with my drummer. We have a joke because neither of us really drinks like after shows or before, and so we call ourselves the grandma band because we just want to get to bed at 9, like,
I love that.
or just like right. In fact, we don't finish packing everything away till 1 in the morning usually. But it's like it's a yeah to just like take care of our physical well-being.
Well, I want to join the grandma band. I feel
Oh,
like I'm
you're so welcome.
I think we should just make a band called the grandma band, and that's like a praise to grandmothers, because they've paved the way for some wiseness, much needed wisdom. Wiseness? God, Lars, is that a word? No, wisdom. So yes, segueing completely naturally into introducing another song, because I think we could go on discussing this for hours. I'd love to play the second chosen track for today from your album Another Life, and it's called Lo-Fi Moon, which I just would, before you introduce it, I do agree with quite a few critics, or reviewers and praisers of your work when they've described your voice as intricately and delicately minimalist. But I think, with all due respect to those critics, there's so much more. I feel like your voice, you do lo use a lot of spoken word, but you sing and you speak at the same time, So I just wanted to tell you that, because I think
Thank you.
that there's just so, I can't wait to see what you do next, is what I'm saying. So would you love to introduce Lo-Fi Moon?
Lo-Fi Moon is this. It was probably one of the most minimalist tracks on the record, but it very much speaks to being displaced and sort of thinking back to the young girl that I was before, I would say. And the last line is inspired by in fact, directly quoting Mahmoud Darwish, "Where will the birds fly after the last sky?" It's from his most famous poem.
That's beautiful. Can you say that line one more time so people can just let that sink in?
So the line is, "Where shall the birds fly after the last sky?"
Beautiful. This is Lo-Fi Moon by Nadine Khoury.
Stay tight, burning fires, Gardenia and molasses I'm sucking on, sugar cubes I am dancing at the bottom, deserted pools, stolen nights, doctored pools, my heart glitches from the news. Got a lo-fi moon still alive in my hand. This girl that I forgot, frozen somewhere in time. Mess undressed, I hear your secrets through the vents, wide awake in the blue hour, wiping lipstick from your collar. The walls have ears, each place you go, humming along to your ghost radio. See a lo-fi moon shining on you, scraps from another life, hanging somewhere in time.
Nobody knows.
This was Lo-Fi Moon, inspired by Palestinian poet Mahmoud Darwish. Beautiful, beautiful song. Nadine, just beautiful music all the way around. Thank you so much for coming on today. I'm really enjoying this talk.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, my pleasure. And I cannot believe we have but a mere 9 minutes left, but never mind. I'd like to sort of ask you, because you mentioned quite a few times about the fact that when you grew up in Beirut, yes, of course, I agree, there wasn't much of a support system for singer-songwriters, especially female singer-songwriters. So when you lived in London and then you moved around all over the world, which is incredible, who became your influences?
In which way do you mean, musically or?
Oh, well, I meant musically, but you're more than welcome to explore other non-musical influences. Yes, go for it.
I mean, when I was really young, I had a thing for Elvis Presley. I don't know why.
Wow.
That was just like one of the first things that I heard. And it was like, there's something about his voice that just seemed larger than life, you know, mm-hmm. as a young child. And actually, like a lot of the music I grew up with was, I love all music, but, you know, I was particularly drawn to the electric guitar. Mm-hmm. That was something that I knew I wanted to play. And I think one of the things that was really important as I was coming of age was, like, I loved lyrics and I loved singers, you know, with voices that I could easily recognize or whatever. But I don't know exactly which artist, but I think Jeff Buckley was probably one of the first where I felt that you could marry, you know, poetry with music and like a vocal. And I think that's what it sort of like a light bulb went on in my head, where I thought, oh, okay, well, that's really what I would like to pursue, is that. So not just being a guitar player or not just being the songwriter, but someone who could do all of those things at the same time.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so were there any, did you have, I wonder, female musical influences as you grew older?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even when I was young, I mean, I loved, there was a band fronted by Tanya Donnelly that was called Belly that I loved. Mm-hmm. Obviously, PJ Harvey and Tori Amos and Cat Power and Mazzy Star. These were all bands that I listened to when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. There's just so many. I mean, I love Nina Simone.
Yes.
Yeah, there were a lot of them, you know, many, many.
Beautiful. And I definitely hear, I really do, all those influences in your music. But I would say this, and this is a compliment. You really are your own music. I can hear the influences, but I don't hear a deliberate effort to sound like anyone else other than your own. And I think that's something. No, it's true, though. Well, and I think that's some.
No, Ellie, please.
No, please. Go ahead.
No, I mean, the other thing was, I never really considered myself a singer because I just was not trained. And also, like, I had this voice where, I don't want to say I was shamed for it, but I was very conscious that it didn't sound necessarily, I don't know, in a specific way. Like, I remember I would force myself to sing really high-pitched and, like, people would be like, what is this? Aww. And I think I've just, like, grown more comfortable with the voice for what it is and, like, its limitations. And it's, so I feel much more, I learned to accept my voice. And I think that's when it started to work the best as what it is, not, you know what I mean? Like,
absolutely. Absolutely. But here's the thing. Maybe this is myself speaking as a singer. A voice is a voice. And if a voice isn't authentically who you are, it can't be any other way. So I respectfully disagree. I think you have a gorgeous voice and you were born with a voice that just needed to sound like you. So
yeah, I guess that's what I was meaning. I was trying to force it to be something that wasn't necessarily. And until I realized what that, I think I just, like, felt more comfortable with it, and then I could just let it be what it is. And so, yeah, which means that I could feel comfortable singing, but half speaking, and that would feel natural, you know?
Yes, 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 I do know. And it's very indicative of your last album, Another Life. And I just wonder, because we keep talking about how you were raised in a way that you sought inspiration really from within, but also from the outside world and the places you've lived. What sort of advice would you give to people that maybe were born in a similar situation to yours? What would be the one thing that you could tell them that would make them feel like they could do it in a way?
I would say believe in what you're doing. I had a friend say, like, where there's a will, there's a way. You know, I really do believe that. And also, I feel like there have been instances where I've been asked to compromise or like not believe in myself, have someone else tell, you know. I think that you need to really love it yourself, like what you're creating, and to be able to stand behind it. That's really important. And I think I was very like, is that a word? I don't know if it's a word in English, but like easily influenced by what people would say, and that would like throw me off a lot. But in fact, I really think that if you love something so much that, you know, you should stick to it and don't compromise your work for other people if you love it, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, in fact, in the sense of what you're producing, you know.
That's the
And
greatest bit of advice. That's the I wish someone had told me that at age 15.
I
Going
would
through
say, like, you also have
puberty.
to obviously work really, really hard because it's so it is hard, but you have to you just and also try to find your people. I think now it's much easier to find, you know, to make connections with people, whereas before it was honestly it was impossible. I couldn't find so I just mean like, you know, just like kindred spirits, you know, it was not so easy. And I think, yeah, if you find that, then hopefully it should be a
That's it.
inspiring journey.
That's yes, and exactly that. And you know, quite a few guests I've had on the show have echoed what you've said in different ways about how ultimately, the end of the day, it may feel like a solo journey being a singer-songwriter. So it's even more important for us, especially as female songwriters, to find kindred spirits and to trust that the relationship you're building is a relationship really for life. You know, they're embodying all the parts of your soul that you just want to lay out on the table for them to play. So that's exactly what it feels like. And again, thank you for putting it so eloquently. I cannot believe we've come to the end of our podcast.
No, it feels like it's too short.
I know. I may perhaps I shall put in a request for a 2-hour podcast sometime in future where we could play even some music. But I just wanted to say thank you so much for coming on to the Notes Between. It's been an absolute pleasure, Nadine.
No, it's su such a pleasure. Thank you so much, Laura.
Thank you. And before we go, folks, I'd like you to just check out Nadine's music. And Nadine, could you just very, very slowly spell out your website for us, if that's okay?
So it's NadineKhoury.com, which is NadineKhoury.com.
Wonderful, folks, and she's got an exciting year ahead, so go and check her out. I know that hopefully we might meet soon. I'm not sure where, but we'll find a way. And I'm going to leave you listeners spellbound by the last track I'm going to play, which is called Vertigo. Anything you'd like to say about that?
don't know. Is there anything I'd like to say? I'd like to say that Francis Booth played the bass on that track, which I love his performance, and in fact the whole band. Yeah, it's one of my favorite tracks on the record.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, so Francis, if you're listening, thank you for playing the beautiful bass. This is Vertigo. Notes, this has been The Notes Between, sponsored by Women in Jazz Media, with myself, Laura Eady, with my very beautiful special guest, Nadine Khoury. Take care.
Strike while the iron is hot, pull up the gear shift and drive. Don't ask me how far we got or what time we'll arrive. The air forest, bone dust and ash. The earth is fire and maze. Bring your tennis racket, pour some milk on your face. Vertigo. Ground cracks under your feet, the building's moving in waves. I see you spinning off axis, disintegrating in rage. The sunlight sets on the gun, somehow the days re-begin. Still in open, flapping wild in the wind. Vertigo, I can't slow down. I'm spinning, not need to keep moving on. Slow down, I'm spinning.